Welcome once again to another fantastic edition of All Things Trek here with DJ Bob.
And DJ Oren.
Oh man, so I had a pretty awesome week, I'll tell you what.
Well, why don't you tell us about it, Bob?
So I spent a bunch of money that I didn't want to spend on the Ren Faire I'm going to next week.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nerd.
Yeah, well, I thought it was only going to be $45 for myself and my fiancée Megan, but unfortunately it's $45 per person, so it's like, $90 I didn't want to spend on going places. Like, And then she wanted to go, like, pick out all these, like, camp chairs and all this other stuff, and more money being spent on going, like, camping and stuff, and then we got a tent. It's just like, so much stuff.
Yeah, Ren Faires are expensive, which is funny, because, you know, when I think of a Ren Faire, I don't really think of, like, spending a whole bunch of money on going to, like, a park and hanging out for a day.
Yeah, well, at least you get to drink and stuff.
This is true, you do.
It is true. 4 p.m. in the West, 7 p.m. in the East, All Things Trek here on Riser Radio. Man, we got a lot of stuff to go through.
We do. We're not
all sorts
even,
of stuff.
We're not done.
But before we get to that stuff, we got a couple of things I want to talk about. Some really, really exciting news, besides me spending a bunch of money on Ren Faire.
Please do. Please
all right,
more.
So as you all know, we've got the Las Vegas contest going on, right?
Uh-huh.
Today is the last day to pitch in, to donate, to have a chance to get tickets for that.
Excellent.
Last day today. Reason being is that at 9 o'clock Pacific, which is midnight Eastern, which I think is 8 in the morning in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I got my time zones right. We will be announcing the winners. Or winner, excuse me, quote unquote, winner. Winner of that contest is what's going to be going on. We're going to have a whole bunch of people online. A whole bunch of people. Or at least I'll be there. Orin will be there. Tosca will at least be there.
Tosca's pretty rad.
Tosca's pretty rad. We'll be there at least. So I don't know about ever other people. I haven't seen like the checklist. I haven't seen the guest list yet to see who will be coming there. Maybe little Danny DeVito will be in there as well.
Oh my goodness.
You know, it's just, these are things that might or might not happen. Anyway, so you have until 9 o'clock Pacific, 9 p.m. Pacific time to cast in for your chance to win these tickets. So I highly advise if you have any inclination whatsoever to go to Las Vegas, to go to the website and donate. Like, now. Like, do it now.
Right now.
You know, you've got the next 5 hours, or excuse me, 4 hours, 54 minutes, and some amount of seconds, as Data would say, to make that happen for yourself. Now, that out of the way.
Yes.
We're an interactive show as well.
We are.
There's a couple ways you can interact with us on the show. First is being on Star Trek Online. Oh man, you're playing a game for Star Trek. Check that out. Through the RR channel, Riser Radio channel. All you gotta do is join channel RR on Star Trek Online. You can also go to the IRC chat room that we have available on the Riser Radio website under the community tab. Just type in a username, you're ready to go. We also have an email, allthingstrek@riserradio.com. And we also have a forum if you want to go ahead and make a post there and say how awesome we are, how not awesome we are, show ideas, we want to make a comment about something, go ahead, or just idle chatter conversation. You know, I'm cool for that too. Just, you know, wasting the day away talking about nothing. Just nothing whatsoever.
Nothing in Ren Faires.
Nothing in Ren Faires. That's right. I spend any much money on it. Don't want to. All
right. So are we ready to continue from last week?
Almost. I think there's one or two more things I want to talk about first.
Well, please,
I know there's
do.
The Twitter that we have that I found out about for Riser Radio. So if you want to follow, if we're going to be in any other contests in the future, just things that we're doing for Riser Radio, by all means follow us on Twitter. There's also a Riser Radio Facebook available. We make some announcements there as well for contests and other cool events that we got coming up. And I think that's it.
All right.
I think that's cool. So that's all of our interaction stuff that we do here. But I'd like you guys to interact with us, especially.
Yeah, we really love to hear from you. Last week we had a really awesome interaction with some of our listeners.
IRC was on fire last week. It was rad.
It got kind of crazy when they figured out how to change their font colors. Then we were concerned.
I was concerned. Reading Rainbow Chat now and freaking thing.
But
all right.
For anyone who was here last week, we ended off talking about. We were talking about Star Trek video games, and we're continuing that discussion today.
Yes, we are.
We have a couple of games to get to, most notably Star Trek Online, and then Bob and I will both be talking about what we think would make the perfect Star Trek game. Which is good for us, I would say. Yeah, I mean, our ideas are very different. Like, when I looked at Bob's idea of a perfect Star Trek game, I was like, this is not at all what I envisioned. It's completely different, so... Obviously,
it's not my fault my ideas are better than yours.
Yeah, that's fair. Obviously things will vary.
No, see, what you're supposed to do at that point as a co-host is rebuttal that and tell me how dumb I am.
Yeah, well, I'm a more passive co-host. I'm not gonna confront you on this.
All right, it's because I'm bigger than you, isn't it?
It's definitely possible. there's not really anywhere to run in this broadcasting booth.
It's true. It's very small and tiny and cramped. And
we ended up last week talking about Star Trek Encounters, which is I think the worst Star Trek video game I've ever played.
That's what we ended with last week.
One
right?
of the worst Star Trek, one of the worst video games ever that I have played. Because it was just really bad. And, of course, last week I also gave a lot of praise to Bridge Commander, some of which I'm going to have to retract now after playing Bridge Commander some more. Bridge Commander is this game that has an incredibly good space combat simulator, but it has awful level design. The biggest sin that Bridge Commander commits is that you don't get to ever save your game except at established checkpoints. But the checkpoints are all at the beginning of the mission. There are no mid-mission checkpoints. So you end up with these levels where if you die, you have to start at the very beginning and go through like half an hour of nothing to get to where you were. But like dying is really easy because so many of the levels are incredibly random in whether or not you'll die because you spend like the first playthrough just trying to figure out what you're supposed to be doing.
Now, I'm not going to go say that you're terrible at this, because I've been trying to play on your machine as well, and I don't know if it's because I'm out of practice or if I just genuinely am just terrible, but I'm also having a little difficulty I'm finding, especially with the mod I installed on there for Bridge Commander as well, because I love flying the Excelsior around, but it's pretty underpowered. I mean, I'm familiar with how to like turn the ship around, all this stuff, to get shield facings on stuff, but it's just like...
Well, if you're playing the Federation, apparently you can play either the Galaxy... the Sovereign or the Akira, and maybe the Defiant from one of the mods, and otherwise your ship is going to be awful. if you're playing, like, you know, like the Ambassador is even from the base game, it's not from a mod. And it's just sort of like...
See, Roka likes Bridge Commander.
Yeah, he does, one of the IRC channels, or one of the chats. I do like Bridge Commander. Like, Bridge Commander is a very quality game. I just get very frustrated with the level design.
You just need a captain better and harder. That's what you need to do.
That's what I gotta do.
All right, but we're not here to talk about Bridge Commander.
We already did that.
We had a lot of that
just
already.
Venting a little bit.
Yeah, you are. You guys should really see him play Bridge Commander. It's comical. Anyway, so we have two other games I want to touch on very, very quickly before we got to Star Trek Online. The first one is Deathmatch Assault and Conquer, a DAC, which was on the Nintendo DS.
I had never heard of this game.
All right, well, it's. I mean, it came out with a new movie.
Yeah.
Is what it was. You know, it was out there, and it's just like, the movie's here, what can we do with the movie to capitalize on this new reboot of Star Trek? Oh yeah, let's make a quick little top-down shooter. And it was literally just, from what I could see anyway, from doing all the research, is that it was just a top-down shooter with you as a starship. In this case, it was the Enterprise from the new movie, with its really stupid fat nacelles, running around shooting stuff.
Because movie tie-in games have always been really great.
Now, from what I understood, there was no actual narrative associated at all with the game. It was just you're the Enterprise and you're shooting stuff. Is all it was.
Yeah,
so it didn't. The game didn't tie itself down, which I thought actually was kind of a plus, just having freeform shooter combat. Because trying to force jam a narrative in there, especially one that would like tie into the movie, would be really strange for that format of game. Especially since we didn't see a lot of starship combat, right? Because I mean, what were the combats we saw in the movie? We saw the Kelvin just getting owned.
Yep.
In the beginning of the movie, just like flailing at the Narada is what it was called.
The mining ship from hell. The mining ship, that was
yeah, it was just flailing, you know, helplessly against that. The Enterprise just getting a bloody nose from the Narada as well later on in the movie.
Yeah,
and then also the Enterprise just shooting at the Narada while it's getting sucked into a black hole. So there's not a lot of space combat.
Which is probably one of the stupidest points of the entire movie. The enemy ship is getting sucked into a black hole. Black hole, you say? What do those things do? Well, they suck in everything that's nearby. We're nearby, aren't we? Uh-huh. Yeah, all right, are we going to leave? No, we're going to shoot at the enemy ship a little bit. But they're in a black hole. Yeah, but I want to get the kill. I want to steal from this black hole.
That's right.
I want to get an assist on this black hole.
I wish Star Trek Universe was a big chat room. All right, so then from that, actually we have a game, which actually I just jumped ahead in time. I didn't realize that. Now we're going to do a little bit of Slingshot Around the Sun here, back to 2006. Star Trek Legacy. Now, this was a game that had come out after we had pretty much this huge lull in Star Trek games. Like, 2002, 2006, we didn't have anything.
I can't imagine why.
You know, all we had to tide us over for Star Trek was Enterprise. That was it. Just Enterprise. And, I mean, there wasn't really a huge like, you know, surging forth of the fan base in support of Enterprise, really. It was there, it was Star Trek, but it was kind of like, you know,
Had Nemesis come out by then?
Yes, Nemesis was in 2002 as well.
Killed the movie franchise, and Enterprise was in the process of slowly strangling the TV franchise.
Right.
So, there really wasn't that big of a market for a video game. So, you know, and then, of course, Legacy...
Well, the other thing was that there was a big lawsuit between, I think it's Paramount and Viacom, is what it was. And this put a big damper on any further development of Star Trek games, because there was some big hoo-ha about, like, the license or so, or the licensing for it.
I hadn't even heard of that.
Yeah, well, I'll show you later. But there was just this big hoo-ha about it, and no one could get, like, rights established for, like, making a Star Trek game happen at all, which is really, really unfortunate, which caused this huge lull. And then finally, Bethesda in 2006 comes along and says, hey, we're going to make this game called Star Trek Legacy, and it's going to be, you're going to play all the way from Archer's, you know, time period, the 22nd century, all the way up to the late 24th century. You get to play as Picard, is what it'll be. And it's all space combat, is what it is.
Wait a minute, this sounds a lot like Star Trek Encounters. Are you sure this isn't the same game with a different title?
I'm sure it's not the same game with a different title.
Okay, because it's made by the same
people. Because
there was
no stupid Kazon racetrack.
Okay, because it's both games are made by, were developed by 4J Studios and published by Bethesda, and they sound
was
very...
Was Legacy 4J Studios?
Yep.
Really?
Yep, I looked into it. Both of them were 4J Studios, which is a Scottish studio. Which is good for them, because it means
well,
they're
I didn't play Encounter, so I couldn't tell you if it was really the same game, just with a different name. But I know that there was no stupid Kazon racetrack.
Well, that's good.
I can tell you that.
That's an improvement.
But, I mean, a lot of people in the Star Trek gaming community were like, all right, this is going to be the game that's going to make or break Star Trek gaming, because we hadn't seen anything for a long time, and a lot of people were hinging their hopes on this game in 2006 for, like, the Star Trek franchise, because Enterprise was over at this point. There wasn't any more Enterprise happening.
Yep.
There wasn't any mention of a new series or movie yet at this point.
Can't imagine why.
Yeah, so it's like, this was, like, the only bit of Star Trek that we could see in the future was in this 2006 game, and a lot of people were, like, hanging their, you know, hat on it, saying, oh man, this is gonna be, like, the thing that's gonna make or break Trek. Which, I mean, it didn't make or break Trek,
no.
But that being said, this game had some ups and downs. The first kind of down being is that it was made for the 360 first and foremost in mind. The reason I know this is because it made a really, really crappy port to PC, because its control scheme was terrible.
Yeah, that's what happened.
I mean, it had like WASD, where S was pitch up, W was pitch down, you had your mouse, which was free look around and tab targeting, and that all made sense, except the controls were really unresponsive at times. It was as if someone didn't take into account all like the controller interrupt requests, which is how you actually get your keyboard to type stuff on a computer for all those not in the computer know, into account when they were making this game port for the PC. It was just like, can't control it whatsoever. The narrative felt a little stretched out and had some side plot stuff that I felt wasn't really necessary for the overall story, which was that there you had this Vulcan which had found this Borg tech in the past from the first contact when they went back in time and blew up the Borg cube.
Uh-huh.
Or the sphere, excuse me. And she goes mad at the power. I was like, oh man, it's really logical that I just seek this perfection, make myself perfect. And she herself turned into a Borg, and then she has a Borg Vulcan ship running around.
Oh dear.
And the entirety of the game was pretty much about you playing as the different captains all the way through the ages, hunting down this Vulcan commander.
Oh my
that
goodness.
Is now turning Borg.
That actually sounds kind of cool.
It does sound kind of cool. Unfortunately, it really became less Trek because it was so obviously about just that next boss battle. Is
oh,
what it was.
That's too bad.
Yeah, so, I mean, there were some good scenes in there. Like, I recall in the Enterprise era with the NX that you were flying around as an archer,
mm-hmm.
there was a part where you had to defend a station from these Romulan ships that were coming in. You had to evacuate the station. Like, that held up pretty well, I thought. Small things like that, I think, work out really well as far as, like, combat encounters go. From, like, a game design standpoint for, like, a Star Trek game, which we will get more into Star Trek design, Star Trek game design later.
Yeah.
But it just didn't feel like it held up really well as a good Star Trek game, just because there wasn't a lot of meat to it. It was you were in a ship with potentially two or three other ships behind you in a fleet that you can kind of command around a little bit, but there wasn't really a whole lot to it. Like, you didn't have to worry about shield facings at all. It was just a, you know, a shield blob that you were targeting. Yeah, that was it. You had limited weapons. Obviously, you know, we only see, like, phasers and photon torpedoes in the game, which is what we had, you know, in the series, in the game, we had that as well. But it just didn't feel like a good, you know, tactical combat fleet simulator like it was kind of touting itself to be, which was really, really unfortunate, because I really wanted that out of Legacy. Now, these things being said, Legacy did look really beautiful. It had some really awesome stuff, and there was a there's a modding community around it still. There's actually a really good mod called Ultimate Universe out there that Chris Jones did, which he was also a guy who was doing Starfleet Command stuff as well way back in the day. He might still be today, I'm not sure. But it just didn't hold up as a good game, and as a result, it suffered tremendously.
Have you ever played it on the Xbox?
I did play it on the Xbox.
Okay, was it any better on the Xbox?
The controls handled better on the Xbox, all right. Which is why I think it scored a lot better on the Xbox. Because I think, like, Metacritic, or maybe not Metacritic, but it was got, like, scores of, like, 90 out of 100 on the Xbox.
Wow.
But it only got, like, a 60 out of 100 on the PC.
Failing grade.
Yep. Or a D or so, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it was just really, really unfortunate that this game just didn't hold up very well to stand the test of time. In which I really wanted it to, because especially when everyone was touting, I was like, oh my gosh, this game's going to make or break Star Trek. So when it was a really bad PC game, I was just like, oh, so hard, like, my heart, like, sunk.
All right, well, Star Trek's broken. We can move on now.
But then the new movie came out in 2009, and then we had Star Trek Online as well.
And Star Trek the Star Trek.
Yeah, so Star Trek Online was announced in 2008.
Yep.
By the way, transition, folks, if you didn't catch that, we're talking about something else now. 2008, we got Star Trek Online announced at, I think it was actually Las Vegas as well.
Huh,
was where that was. Really? And they had, like, a webcast and everything going on. Like, initially, there was Star Trek Online being produced by another company called Perpetual. And they were talking about all these different design documents that they wanted to put forth. Like, one of them was where you're acting, like, as a member of the crew of a ship. Someone else was, like, a helmsman, an engineer, a weapons officer. Like, you had a whole player crew on this starship, working this starship.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, obviously, that's not something that will necessarily work for...
No, it sounds a little overambitious.
It is very ambitious, but mind you, it's something I wanted to have happen. Unfortunately, Perpetual went under. They decided not to go ahead with this because they just stopped working on it.
They probably just didn't have the capital.
They probably didn't have the capital for it. And that's when Cryptic picked it up. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're gonna do Star Trek Online. This is going to happen. And that was in 2008 that they announced that, and then in 2010, February, they released it, finally. But, I'll tell you what, it had some problems.
Yeah, for reference, I have actually played about an hour of Star Trek Online.
You have, but this was post-season 4, mind you, of the Star Trek Online you played.
Okay, so tell me about some of the original, so I haven't experienced the OG of Star Trek Online.
Alright, so Star Trek Online promised quite a bit. It promised a universe that the player would be influencing, exploration that would actually genuinely be dynamic, and it would be very different every time you went to, like, a new system or a planet to explore stuff. There would be PvP, fully developed Federation and Klingon factions, only two factions at start, which they were saying they would do more, like, expansions or so. We didn't get this, though. What we got instead was a fully fleshed out, well, not really even fully, a fleshed out Federation faction.
Yeah.
Which had, you know, a lot of little stories in there that you could play, missions that kind of linked together as you went along. It had some pretty good narrative-driven stuff. Klingon faction was not fleshed out, and just before launch, they actually announced that Klingon faction would be PvP only.
Oh my goodness.
PvP only. Which I thought was kind of a rad idea at first, but then I saw it implemented and how PvP was actually working. It didn't really work out all that well. And then, exploration wasn't very dynamic or fulfilling.
Well, MMOs love to promise things.
They do love to promise things.
Because, I guess when you're making an MMO and you're sinking that much money, you're going to promise whatever you can. We'll push a few more boxes off the shelf.
Yeah.
Because you have to sell so many units to make up for the cost of producing an MMO.
Yeah, and then what was the biggest kind of letdown for me initially for Star Trek Online was that I didn't actually have an influence in the world at all.
Yep.
Yeah, so Star Trek Online, when I was first looking at it, first playing it, first in the open beta and then at release, it wasn't looking like, you know, a really good MMO. You know, like, pretty much the biggest reason I've stuck with it is because I'm such a huge Star Trek fan, and this is kind of the best Star Trek experience I can get at the moment for both space and ground play, more or less. Granted, a lot of it is, you know, combat-oriented. You know, it's like the Federation's at war with, like, 7 different people right now. It's like they're fighting Romulans, they're fighting Borg, they're fighting Klingons, they're fighting Breen, they're fighting Hirogen, kind of on a sporadic basis.
Hirogen, huh?
Hirogen.
Hirogen hiked a long way to get here.
In Romulan space, mind you, they're fighting Hirogen. Cardassians, which are like the Truway guys, which are like, they want the old Dominion
back.
They
mentioned those guys in an episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, Truway, Dominion, just all these people. They're just at war with, like, everybody right now. They're just fighting all sorts of people, and it just makes me cry, because this mission exploration that I thought I was going to embark on turned out to be more or less tours of duty around the galaxy, holding down the fort, in my ship and my crew that, you know, are faithful behind me while I go out and conquer the galaxy in the name of the Federation. The impression I got when I was leveling up through Star Trek Online is like, you know, am I not going to ever meet anybody out here that I want to perhaps just, you know, say hi to and ask how it's going? Yeah, and this is actually where the Foundry actually does really well later on. But the other big thing I had with Star Trek Online was the ground combat.
Yep.
The ground combat I played at first and what you've got now is way different.
Yeah, I heard they improved it, which I find kind of hard to believe because I played the ground combat and I thought it was awful.
I think that's probably because you're just not used to shooters myself. But
no, I can play shooters, not very well, but the controls in the ground are so clunky compared to the space controls.
Well, I'll go more into the controls a little later for ground combat, what we have now. But at the start of Star Trek Online, it was very much an RPG setup where everyone had like a health bar. And it was all these abilities you mashed on your 1 through 0 keys, you could set up hotkeys for stuff, and you literally fired your phaser by pressing the 1 key, and then a global cooldown would happen for, you know, like 2 or 3 seconds or longer, depending if you use like a secondary ability, like a stun beam or a sniper bolt or so. But it was set up very RPG-like, and it was such a huge turnoff with the way that you see Star Trek, like, ground combat, quote-unquote, happen on the show, which is, if someone takes a phaser hit, they go down, typically, you know? Like, I was expecting, like, cover mechanics and, like, hiding behind stuff and taking pot shots out from around a box with a phaser and shooting at stuff. But
made of something that can resist phaser blasts.
It didn't happen that way. And then Season 4 actually came along not too long ago and actually changed some of that to where the ground combat is faster, your weapons shoot faster, they feel like actual weapons now when you're in, like, a firefight. The ground combat is still a little clunky, I'll admit, with the way the shooter mode works, which is what they introduced. Because you go to a reticle there, and then how you use your abilities is by using either the T or the B keys to scroll through whatever you have on your hotbar.
Yeah.
And it'll select those three for you for your left mouse, right mouse, and middle mouse button. Right. Is how that's supposed to work.
Yeah, and I did that, and
I think that design is really clunky, and I think we should just go with what most other like action RPGs have, like Diablo, for instance, where you can just go ahead and use your shooter mode with your left click, right click, middle mouse button if you want to for your three basic attacks, which are like fire your primary attack, your secondary attack is your right click, and then your melee is your middle mouse button.
Your palm strike.
Yeah, but then just have your 1 through 0 keys. You know, granted, there are a lot of abilities out there you can use just for your character, and then you've got your devices like hyposprays and shield batteries and what you can go and strap on yourself. But it's just so frustrating to try to wrap your head around that. As a result, I kind of use RPG mode a little more because ability just to mash my heart bar keys.
I know for me, after I got done with like my opening space mission, I was actually kind of happy with the way the spaceship flew, and like it felt kind of, you know, it was fun. And
the spaceship combat's fantastic.
Yeah, and then I got on the ground, and I was like just chomping around trying to get my character to go where I wanted him to go, and it was just such a break. I was like, I was actually finding myself wishing that ground combat wasn't a thing in this game because it was just so much worse than the space combat. I was just like, what? No, let me back in space, please.
I don't want to be here
anymore. No, I don't want to go on the ground. I don't want to go on an away mission. Can't I send someone else on the away mission?
Yeah, so then we have STS, which are supposed to function a lot like raids.
Yeah.
You know, any other game. And we've also got, like, fleet actions, which are kind of like public quests, or were public quests anyway, kind of what we saw from Warhammer Age of Reckoning, which is you can just kind of wander in and just kind of continue on with where progress is being made. And usually there's a story around it, like, oh my gosh, the Klingon fleet is destroying Starbase 24. We got to save Starbase 24. Or, oh man, the Gorn are setting up this minefield out here. We got to destroy this minefield before they set it up. Things like that, which those work out pretty well, I think. They definitely slant more towards whoever does more damage as opposed to who is actually helping with the entire scenario. Like, it doesn't reward people who are acting as fleet support, for instance, who are just healing others and hanging around buffing people, for instance. It definitely rewards, like, a player who's in a front-loaded escort, for instance, who can just blow ships away and then run away and come back and do it again. Which, you know,
I know that when I was playing on the tutorial missions, like, jerks kept coming in and blowing up the things I needed to blow up to finish my tutorial quest. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, hey, what? I needed that. Come back here.
That's a thing that happens. But, overall, Star Trek Online has, in fact, gotten better over the past year and a half now.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Even though you may not see it.
Well, I mean, I didn't play them.
There's been some additions. They started doing what are called featured episodes, which are these 5 mission story arcs that they do. Which, like, the first one we had to do with the Defurry sector. Which, there's these peace-loving Defurry folks who are Defurries? Like, oh, Defurries.
The Furries?
I think that's how you say it, is Defurry. D-E-F-E-R-I.
Okay.
You shush. Okay. I know where you're going with
it. I'm just saying. You know what that sounds like.
Defurry, I don't know how you want to say it. But if someone in the chat wants to give me, like, a little syllable sound out thing, that'd be fantastic. So you can spell it out and be like, blah, 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 blah. I can say it right. That'd be awesome. I think it's Defurry. Or the Defurry. Something like that. People, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, you go into their space, the Brain are harassing them, they're looking for the Preserver Archive. Now, if you know your Trek, the Preservers are the aliens from The Chase, and I think it's season 4 of TNG, where they're the long-dead race that had gone and seeded a bunch of worlds with, like, their DNA.
Those guys.
And the Cardassians, the Klingons, and Romulans are all chasing after, try to find out, like, who these people are.
The guys who they modeled the Founders off of.
Yeah. In fact, it's the same actor, too.
Well, that's the thing that weirded me out so much when I watched, when I first saw Odo in DS9. I was like, that guy looks so familiar. Where have I seen that makeup before? And then the female changing showed up, and I was like, now I know where this is from.
Uh-huh. But yeah. And you had to find, like, a Preserver Archive and protect the Defurry from them. And there's a bunch of there's 2 other series that are like that, with the promise from Cryptic that they'll do more of that. There's also the Foundry that came out, which allows you as the player to create your own missions. And I think this is such a fantastic tool for Star Trek Online.
I mean, that does sound like a really cool idea.
I mean, there are some really awesome missions out there. I've actually made 3 of them myself, which are a continuous arc, which actually continues the Defurry story arc. Then there's not so good missions out there.
Well, that's what's going to happen whenever you allow fans to make stuff, is there's going to be some really cool stuff, and then there's going to be some really junky stuff.
Yeah, but I make it a point to try to play, like, you know, a mission or two, you know, every week, just so I can get that, like, fix a Star Trek or so, and some good storytelling out of it. Because mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, that there's no good, real PvP out there. No, don't get me wrong. There is a PvP community out there, and they're really awesome. I've played with some of them before, and they're really good at PvP play that is here currently in Star Trek. The problem I have with PvP is that there is no direct influence of the PvP that you have on the Star Trek universe that we have here in Star Trek Online. And it hurts so much more because the Klingon Federation are at war right now. The Klingon Empire and the Federation, they're both at war with each other right now. And I really wish there was some sort of territory control game, which supposedly is being talked about for Season 5 coming out. Which I really hope actually is what I think it will be, which I'll actually get into a little later with the what I think would be the good or the best Star Trek game, at least for me. But I think we're going to go to a break for now because, oh man, my lungs are getting tired. I'm sure
when we come back, I'll have something relevant to say.
It's true. For now, here's actually a song I found actually when I went to the movie theater.
Oh, yeah. That sounds kind of creepy.
Well, I actually went in to see Captain America with Megan, my fiance, and we saw a preview for a movie called Abduction with Taylor Lautner, who, I don't know if anyone knows, is in Twilight as the werewolf dude.
Yeah, all right.
I think Team Jacob, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I think it's Team Jacob.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, Abduction, the movie that this song is from, is like Jason Bourne Jr., where he's like, I think he's a genetically engineered dude. Anyway, this song's from it, and I really actually like the song. It's actually Kids by Slaybell. Back here at All Things Trek on Riser Radio. So,
yeah,
there is this contest going on.
Oh, is there?
And there is only another 4 hours, 16 minutes, and some amount of seconds to get yourself some entries into that by going to our website and donating. I'm telling you what, if you have any desire to go to the Las Vegas Star Trek convention, we can send you there for free.
It'll be awesome.
I mean, you even have a chance, or you will have dinner with, if you want to go anyway. I'm sure they'd be heartbroken if you didn't want to see them. DJ Roxy, Tosk, Dano, and Xander. I believe Xander is going still. I'm not sure on Xander at the moment, but I'm pretty sure you might see him there. You'll have dinner with them. they're at the convention.
And they're pretty awesome.
Yeah, and then, I mean, from what I can hear, Roxy can actually stuff down a lot of food.
Oh my.
I mean, she's still got a good figure, though, but she can still pack away a whole bunch of food. She's got amazing metabolism. She has to.
Apparently.
Just an amazing metabolism.
I feel comfortable talking about this now. I don't know what's good, what the repercussions of this are going to be.
Very Foxy Roxy, as I think the term is thrown around.
All right.
Back in the, you know, the back room. But anyway, Rocco's going to be up after us. He's going to have an electric show tonight. He's also going to be talking up all of our contest, our Las Vegas contest going on. He's going to have an awesome show tonight. I recommend everyone listen to it right after this broadcast. And he's going to be the last show before we announce tickets or announce the winners.
So you pretty much have to listen to it.
You do.
Otherwise, it's bad juju.
Yeah. I mean, if you want good luck for your entries, you know, that's probably a good idea to listen to Rockwell.
Yeah.
You know, I hear he brings good luck, as well as being dangerous and not having pants sometimes.
Is that a thing? I hadn't heard about that.
Oh, man. Rockwell just sometimes is in a booth without pants. And I walked by it once. I was getting my coffee from the break room. I was walking by the booth after our show, and there was Rockwell with no pants.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a little disturbing. I had to, you know, kind of just curl up on my couch and just eat, you know, chocolate to kind of get over it.
That's fair.
It was. Anyway, where are we at? What are we doing?
Well, we've just been talking about Star Trek Online.
Yes.
And we discussed the Foundry and how the Foundry was pretty cool.
Yes.
And I wanted to mention that Star Trek Online, it's like, it's 3D, like, space combat. But I don't entirely understand why. Because from what I could see, there are no ventral or dorsal shields. It's a four-shield grid.
Right.
And it seems like there's no dorsal or ventral weapon facings. It's just, you know, the weapon facings are all done by either front, side, or back. And so going above or below someone seems to leverage no particular benefit. It's a thing you can do if you want to.
Well, it's a matter of positioning is all it is. Like, a lot of, especially the PvP fights, are all about being above somebody. And a lot of that has to do with player comfort zone in PvP. Because I'll tell you what, when I'm trying to target somebody and they're, like, directly above me, it's really hard to get my, or it feels like anyway, to get my ship into a position where I can shoot at them and then also be able to also bring, like, my torpedoes to bear on them if I wanted to, all my different arcs or my front and rear. It's very awkward sometimes to try to navigate that third plane, especially when you've only got, like you said, no ventral or dorsal, like, weapons facings or shield facing, for instance. But the reason it's like that is mostly, I think, due to accessibility.
All right.
Like, there was a huge discussion before Star Trek Online launched and after it launched about being able to actually navigate that third dimension by, like, being able to do, like, axis rotation and having ventral and dorsal shielding and different weapon arcs for that and whatnot. Which, in hindsight, like, I was a big proponent for that. Like, I really wanted that to happen, to have that third dimension in there.
Bridge Commander, the MMO.
Yeah, but after seeing you play Bridge Commander, especially...
What? Know, No! There is nothing wrong with the way I actually play Bridge Commander. I am just fine at Bridge Commander, sir. I mean, I'm not the best at Bridge Commander, but that is the reason I continue to play Bridge Commander, despite the fact that it insists on, like, kicking me in the teeth.
Well, right, but okay, so not all of us gamers out there can be awesome F-18 ace pilots, is the point I'm getting at. So, you know, it was an accessibility thing, I think is what it was. So, you know, to have a simpler shield-facing setup as well as weapon-facing setups. Just so, like, the everyday guy can go ahead and sit down and play for, like, an hour if they want to. You know, so it'd still be an enjoyable game for them without having to worry about, you know, a third dimension necessarily.
Game designers love to underestimate gamers. I really don't think that would have been a big problem.
It's not, I don't think the game designers so much as it is the marketing
department. Okay, the marketing department's underestimate gamers. I think gamers could handle that.
Well, the marketing department doesn't care about the gamers that are already going to buy the game. They're trying to figure out how to get those guys that aren't playing the game is their thing. So they want to market to that guy that's not playing the games right now so they can get that much more money in their pocket.
Right, but I mean, having having your ship be able to rotate like that isn't going to make your game less accessible except in PvP, because... And the PvP is already incredibly inaccessible to casual players. Nothing you do will make PvP accessible to casual players. So, because, like, you can, in Star Trek, in Bridge Commander, as long as you're playing it on easy mode, you can go through, like, at least the early levels without ever rotating your ship or worrying about your top or bottom shielding. You can just point your ship in the direction you want it to go and fly around in the third dimension like that. And it's only in the really hard levels and in player versus player that your facings on your top and bottom become important. And you ease players into it. And a player that has played that long, regardless of if they consider themselves casual or hardcore, will understand the game well enough to actually be able to utilize those functions. Or at least that's my opinion. I don't know. I get really tired of hearing how games had these really cool ideas and then cut them because they thought it would make the game less accessible. To me, that's just laziness.
I don't know if that was the, if that was the official explanation given or not. But that's my rationale for it, is that they didn't want to make a game that was, I guess, quote-unquote, too complicated. Like, you and I can understand that third dimension, no problem, as I'm sure many other people that are playing Star Trek Online right now probably could. You know, but their thinking at the time was like, oh my gosh, the 42-year-old dad who's playing with his son isn't going to be able to figure this out.
I guess.
And I think that's how the conversation went. So,
I have a feeling that that's, I don't know. That, anyway, this is all theoretical.
It's true.
tell me about the Star Trek Online economy, because I didn't play long enough to get into that.
You mean the intergalactic slave trade?
Yeah, I wanted to hear about how that works.
Okay, so the concept that the game has for you for your economy is that you gain energy credits. And this is on the Klingon or the Federation side. You gain energy credits, which can be spent on equipment, on getting new officers, and, well, not training them up. That uses a different currency called merits or honor, I think, for the Klingon side. I think it's honor. No, yeah. It's still merits on the Klingon side. Honor is just the experience analogous for that. Oh, excuse me. I have a little indigestion from my lunch earlier. That's no good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I need to get Tums later. Anyway, but the economy doesn't really function all that well in Star Trek Online. Like, you still have an auction house like you do in most other MMOs. There's still crafting that you can do, but there's no real need for that kind of stuff, especially during, like, the level-up process. Like, only at end game, where you're level 51 or Vice Admiral, is it where, like, the crafting becomes kind of relevant, where you craft up your Aegis set. Or Aegis?
I don't know. I think it's pronounced Aegis, if we're thinking of the same word.
Well, yeah, there's a purple set that you can craft up, and that's kind of alright stuff that you can have before you go and venture into the STF, so the Special Task Forces, which are kind of like raids, where you get your Borg equipment, which is what you would primarily use for doing, like, the STF. But you can still mix and match the equipment up to head into PvP. There's also, like, the emblem grind, is what it's called, where you do, like, STFs and then dailies to get your emblems to purchase gear from these vendors that are emblem vendors on the respective homeworlds for better, like, purple, like, Mark 11 gear, stuff like that. So there isn't really, but anyway, there's not really an economy associated with Star Trek Online that you can recognize as a true economy. Like, there's some people who use the auction house still for trading around, like, the components used to make all the equipment for crafting, but that's really how lazy do you feel. It's kind of how it is. As it comes down to most crafting, you know, items anyway, or materials for that, it's how lazy do you feel. You can go to the auction house or you can just go farm them yourself.
And you end up with, like, huge piles of energy credits you have no way to spend.
You do. It's just, I've got 10 million myself sitting in my bank. I've just got nothing to do with them.
You gotta Scrooge McDuck through them. That's the only way.
I guess, something.
That's
I don't know.
Before.
I suppose I could play the intergalactic slave trade. You know?
Yeah, go and buy officers.
You know, but you can only have so many officers at that point as well. You know,
I sort of imagines, whenever I think of that, I imagine, like, Picard and Sisko sitting in a room, and Sisko's like, I want O'Brien. I want him. Give him to me. And Picard's like, I don't know. O'Brien makes our transporters work. I don't know if I want to give him up. He's like, he's kind of cool. And Sisko's like, all right, man. All right. I will give you 1 million energy credits for O'Brien. And Picard's like, I have, like, 50 million energy credits. Just hang out. You got to offer me something more.
You gotta offer something
like,
more.
Okay. If you give me O'Brien in, like, 6 months, I will punch Q. And then Picard's like, okay, you can have him.
No. Yeah, so, something like that. It's just, the economy just doesn't function very well, I feel. Or there's not enough money sink for us as players, for at least the energy credits, for an economy to function. Because I know you can't trade emblems around. At least I don't think you can. I haven't seen an ability to be able to trade emblems around or anything like that. You can't trade badges of exploration around. Like, all the actual currency that matters, like the badges and the emblems and such, those are all things that you gain on your own that mm-hmm. you can't really be influenced by someone else to get. Like, outside of, like, maybe doing the STFs, which that'd be, like, an extra, like, I don't know, if you do all of them, what is that? Like, I want to say 15 or 20 emblems mm-hmm. if you do all the STFs. Unless it's been changed again. But, you know, there's just really no kind of good economy setup right now for Star Trek Online because everyone's got all this money hanging around, and gear is accessible to anybody. Like, you don't have to be rocking out in green or purple or blue gear when you're leveling up. You certainly don't. You don't even have to at end game unless you're really going to be heavily into the min-max PvP game or the min-max STF PvE game.
I feel like the Federation needs to institute taxes and just levy huge taxes to pay for the war effort, and suddenly everyone logs on and like 90% of their money is gone. I feel like that's something that we should do.
Players love it when you mess
with their characters.
Well, if you take away something I'm not using in the first place, I mean, yeah, it's gone, but what was I using it for in the first place, though?
Just as a way to, I don't know, as a way to make the currency a little scarcer, because if the currency isn't scarce, there's no value to it.
Yeah, well, I could see that driving prices down, like the auction house, for instance, because there's not as much energy credits flying around. But even then, there's not huge demand in the auction house for these goods, because everyone can craft up the same things, or they can all find the same gear by doing the same encounters. You know, it's like there's no real, you know, need to even have to worry about the economy at all. I mean, the one thing I will say is that the intergalactic slave trade can be profitable for those that really feel like energy credits
really
is what they
work
want.
Really work in the auction house.
Well, yeah, because your bridge officers, which is how you get the majority of your abilities in space, for instance, and then also on the ground, you're just kind of going rocking around by yourself.
Yeah,
that's how you get a lot of those abilities through your bridge officers. And there's some abilities out there which are hard to get. So the economy kind of functions for the slave trade, you know, a bit. And I do call it slave trade because you are in fact buying and selling people on the auction house. So I do call it the slave trade because of that. You know, but it's just, there's no real economy there that is actually something that I would consider Star Trek. Granted, we haven't seen a lot of the economy in Star Trek, and, you know, it's hard to reconcile, like, the economy with the Replicator, our first episode, which we talked about,
yeah.
The Replicator, for instance.
Federation economy runs on goodwill.
Yeah, it does. You know, so it's, granted, there's no good model to go off of, but I really feel from a game design standpoint, which a lot of decisions were made for Star Trek Online, how it functions are from a game design standpoint in the first place.
As opposed to a setting standpoint.
Yeah, that the game really could have seen a better economy model put in.
Really
I really
could
think
have.
That.
Alright, you have anything else you want to tell me about Star Trek Online?
I actually have plenty to say about Star Trek Online, but a lot of that is actually about my design document for my best Trek game.
For our Star Trek game fanfictions that we made up. Right.
Yes, or fanfics.
But before we get to those, there's one more game, which is a theoretical game that will, in theory, be coming out at some point soon, called Infinite Space.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
It's a nifty looking browser game, two dimensional. You fly around and you shoot spaceships. In theory, maybe there's an exploration element. The news broadcasts. I won't think about what I just said. Have been very, very vague on what the gameplay is actually going to be. But the ship models look kind of cool.
Yep.
And it's set in the DS9 timeline, which is neat, and it's like going to be like a freemium, and for anyone who doesn't know what freemium means, it's free to play, but there's all these things in-game you can spend money on, and it's going to be free to play on your browser, and it just looks kind of cool, and it's got the Okudas working on it.
Yep,
and
Michael
so
and Denise Okuda.
That's cool. And in theory, it's supposed to come out sometime this summer, but that's looking less and less likely. I think maybe they've even just pushed it back to any time in 2011.
Is that what they said on their website?
I think so. Originally, it was summer 2011. I don't think it says that anymore.
Now we're halfway through summer. Two-thirds through summer.
And they haven't even started the open beta yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, my hope is that it will come out eventually, because it looks pretty cool.
Find the naval base in Alameda, Doctor?
Yes.
Well, that's where they have the nuclear whistles, I understand.
It's across the bay in Alameda.
Yep.
Anyway, I get your reference. Alright, so now that we've talked about real Star Trek games, Bob and I have decided to get our nerd on and talk about games we wish existed.
Yes, I do wish this game existed that I want to talk about.
If we had the power to just magic up some games, this is what we would do.
Or if we had the investment capital.
Alright, so I guess we'll talk about my idea first, because I made my idea first, I typed it out first, so there we go.
Well, where do you go?
Anyway, alright, so this is the perfect Star Trek game for Orin. This is what I
want
to play.
Orin Edition.
Not necessarily indicating this would be the perfect Star Trek game for anyone else. But first of all, it would be single player. Because, I don't know, I've always been more into single player than MMOs. Especially stories. There's nothing that ruins a story more for me than another player.
That's unfortunate.
It's just a fact. like, other players make it very hard for me to enjoy stories, because they're always there, being snarky, reminding me the story's not actually about me.
And you're not the hero.
And, you know, usually, because stories have to have some kind of central character, the story ends up being about an NPC, because it can't be about the player, because there's more than one. So it's got to be about this other guy, who's not even a player. And I'm just, like, watching that guy's story. But anyway, it would be single player, it would not be an RTS, first of all. I don't want to start another Armada, because Armada was fine, but it didn't really feel like a Star Trek game to me because it was all StarCrafty. Like, you had unit-producing structures, and you built a galaxy class in something like 45 seconds, and that felt really weird, and is really it's really hard to reconcile a story with that kind of game mechanic. So, I'm okay with having...
It's the Starship Replicator.
Yeah, I guess. You know, certain RTS elements are cool, but not the traditional, like, you know, drag a box over your units and tell them to go do something.
Mm-hmm.
You would be, you know... And because Star Trek games have the potential, for a very engaging story, because there have been some very interesting stories told in the Star Trek universe.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that should be what this game should focus on. Like a, you know, DS9-style story arc. And... So, like, in terms of gameplay, I'm seeing this as being kind of a combination of Bridge Commander and Mass Effect. If I was gonna, like, pick two existing games, I'd sort of mash those together.
Okay.
Where you would have your ship controls, and you would be, like, and, you know, and the ship controls in Bridge Commander are not perfect. There's a few things I would tweak, but it's hard for me to imagine making them that much better than they are. I would take out the really, really annoying, you know, critical hit kinetic damage thing, because there's a function in Bridge Commander, and I don't know if it's a bug or a feature, but there's a function where, because sometimes torpedoes at very close range will do a little bit of damage even through your shields, and then there's a function where you can get a critical hit, which will multiply the damage, and if that critical hit is to your warp core, you can get hit by one torpedo, which will go through your shields, hit your warp core, and explode you, even if you're at full health.
The dangers of space.
I've seen that happen once, and it was incredibly annoying. Mm-hmm. But other than that sort of thing, I think the Bridge Commander setup is, like, as close as we're going to get to perfection in terms of a Star Trek space simulator. And I would, you know, and the other thing is I would clean up the actual, like, the controls where, because you can either fly the ship by steering it yourself using the keyboard, or you can give your officers orders. I clean up that a little bit. Like, sometimes you can give your tactical officer, like, the wrong order and your ship will just stop. and he'll be, like, sitting there looking at you, and I'm like, what, I told you to go do a thing. He's like, yeah, but that conflicted with the last set of orders you gave me, so instead of going to the new ones, I'm just going to stop the ship.
Instead of doing the thing.
So, you know, fix up that kind of stuff. And then, I might have misspoken when I said Mass Effect, because as far as I see it, the ground stuff, because you would be able to go, you would switch between controlling your ship and controlling a character. I'm actually seeing it being more like Half-Life now that I think about it, because...
Half-Life? Really?
Half-Life. Because I don't... And Half-Life is just the one that comes to mind, because I really don't like RPG shooters. I don't like mixing RPG elements with shooters, because it's like, if I'm playing a shooter, I want whether or not I hit my target to be dependent on my skill, and if I'm playing an RPG, I want whether or not I hit the target to be based on my character's skill and my strategy. I don't like games where the higher I raise my gun skill, the easier it is to shoot. And basically, like, you know, when I'm using my character as a crutch, that kind of annoys me. And that's a very common trend, and there are a lot of good games in that vein. I'm not saying any of them are bad. I'm just saying that is something I don't like.
So are we still going to see, then, for this game that you would want to make, any RPG element at all where you are statting something up?
No, not really. This would be, like, I guess maybe technically this doesn't even qualify as an RPG. I would be more involved in, like, the story elements where, like, you would be taking control of, the captain's the most obvious, but maybe occasionally take control of someone else and play through, like, a lower deck scenario. And I think a lot of this would be focused on not...
Maintenance technician Ricky.
Yeah, that guy, you know, see what he's up to during this epic combat.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, that's actually a very important thing to me, is that the game wouldn't just be about combat. Because Star Trek is about so much more than space combat.
Absolutely.
But every good Star Trek game to date has been about space combat. With the possible exception of, you know, the 25th anniversary point-and-click adventure game was okay. but, like, there's so much more to that. And in my perfect Star Trek game, science, diplomacy, and exploration and engineering would be as important as combat. I guess engineering kind of goes into combat, but, you know, science and exploration would be as and diplomacy would be as important as any combat mechanic. And I think the best way to do that is to employ something like, if anyone here has ever played the pencil and paper game Burning Wheel, they have a system called the Duel of Wits.
Now, I really like the fact that you introduced the Duel of Wits from Burning Wheel in the first place, like when we were playing earlier, but I think the audience would love to hear this because it's such a rad idea.
Yeah, so the Duel of Wits is... like I said, it's from the RPG Birding Wheel, and what it is it's a social conflict mechanic. Because it's really easy to create and envision, or easy, relatively speaking, to create and envision, you know, physical combat resolutions.
Right, I punch you, you shoot a gun at me.
Like, you know, it's all pretty standard. It's much harder to create social conflict resolutions because social conflict is so much more abstract, and it's so much harder to pin down all the various factors. But in the Duel of Wits, both players script out, like, specific maneuvers, like point or obfuscate or things like that. And as a result, you play through this social conflict, and that way the players don't feel like they're being cheated out of gameplay for negotiating their way through an encounter instead of fighting their way through it. Because some people, like in Mass Effect, the fact that you can talk the main boss to death, some people complain about that. They feel like they were cheated
on gameplay.
Yeah, they were like, I was cheated out of my final boss fight. And that's, you know, that's no good.
Mm-hmm.
So you want the diplomacy to be just as engaging as the combat.
Right.
And that's, you know, so that's...
point, counterpoint, obfuscate their, attack their position.
Yeah, exactly.
Things like that, yeah.
And of course, you know, the quality of your voice acting and your writing is going to make or break if that's any good.
True.
If you have bad, nothing will save your social situations if you have bad voice acting.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
And then, like...
Like the Old Republic, which hinges on voice acting. Good lord.
Yeah, the Old Republic. Oh boy. That's a game. That's coming out eventually.
But what other points you got for your game? Because I know, like, the dual wit system is really awesome. You want to see, like, the science exploration. Combat's still there.
And I really wanted to focus on your ship and, like, getting to know your ship. And, like, figuring out, you know, the story of your ship and what it ends up doing. And not so much this, like, constant trading up of ships that you see in most games, where, like Bridge Commander was really good about this, because it only happened once, and it was, like, a big part of the story of switching from the Dauntless to the Sovereign.
Right.
But, like, I absolutely don't want a game where you mine resources to buy a better ship. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, this game would have no in-game currency beyond, like, and equipment would be issued to you by Starfleet, and you would have the equipment it makes sense for you to have in the story, but there wouldn't be any kind of, mining, because nothing yanks you out of an epic science fiction story faster than having to probe a planet for palladium. All right? Mass Effect reference there.
I really like that scanning game, though. Was
what?
Because it made more sense to me.
Are you from the same planet as me? Oh, Oh my goodness, my world is rocked. I thought no one liked that. I thought that was the one thing I could safely mock. Because I thought no one liked that accident.
I thought it made more sense than going down the planet and playing a minigame.
I guess, but it's incredibly boring.
Anyway.
So yeah, none of that. It would be, you know, the story of a Starfleet ship. Ideally, I'd like to set it between, like, Kirk and, Kirk and the Next Generation era, and, like, maybe,
After Star Trek VI, before TNG.
Yeah, and, like, you know, get into that era that hasn't ever really been explored, and see what's up, and have, like, you know, ideally, I would really even love a story of, like, political intrigue within the Federation itself. Because that's only been explored, like, very, very fringely by DS9.
Yep.
And almost always the conflict you're having in the Star Trek games are with aliens. And I just think it would be really interesting to have a story of some kind of, you know, maybe even a political coup or just a shift in the Federation's fundamental principles. And stuff like that. I think that would be really interesting. And I think this would be served very well by a single-player space slash, you know, like, action puzzle adventure. I think that would be cool.
And it would all be single player?
All be single player. I mean, you could have a skirmish mode for fighting other people in your spaceship.
Just cause.
You can have that, whatever. But I don't have any desire to play this game with other people. I think having more than one player in this game would kind of destabilize it and make it not really possible to do what I want to do.
So what would you... So say your game was published, right? It's been put on the shelf. It's there with its $49.99 price tag. Well, you know, assuming you got past your pre-production, your production, and, you know, you got the capital to do it, and it was put on the shelf. What are you going to do to support your game afterwards?
Well, I mean, there's the obvious DLC. If it's a popular game, you make a sequel, because that's how, you know, that's... and you can always have, like, side missions that you put in through DLC. People tend to really like that, and certain DLCs have been really fun, others have been not so good. There's a really good Mass Effect 2 DLC that I haven't played yet, and there are some Dragon Age ones that people say are really good or really bad, depending on who you talk to. But that's a way that you can continue to support a single-player game after it's been released.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of how common continuous payment is getting in games. Nowadays, it seems like all the like new big games are games that you will pay for forever. Because it seems like now, if you make a game that people only pay for once, you're some kind of sucker. You know, you need to demand their money until they stop playing your game. And I'm not a fan of that idea. Because it means we're going to see a decline in big single-player games, because no one's going to pay for a single-player game more than once. And so, you know, we're just not going to see it.
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of the DLC for, like, Mass Effect, for instance, has been pretty successful. And then even before that, Neverwinter Nights, they had, like, premium modules that they sold, for instance. I mean, premium modules were kind of late in the game's lifespan, granted, but even then, those modules sold pretty well.
Yeah, but there's a question of how effective they are in terms of sales. And, like, how much money that you generate from them versus how much you would generate from a game that people are always paying for. And I don't know the numbers on that, but it certainly seems like the trends, the way things are going, it seems to favor continuous pay.
So you're talking, you think that an MMO model would be better?
Financially, maybe. but I don't think it would make a better
game. I mean, honestly,
game.
I wouldn't, for the game you're putting forth, I wouldn't pay a monthly fee for it myself.
No, I certainly wouldn't.
That'd be silly. you know, because there's no dynamic experience involved with it whatsoever.
Nope. I mean, you play through it, you play through the story, and you're done.
Yeah. So, you know. All right, we're going to go to a quick music break here before I get on with my perfect game.
Oh, man, Bob's perfect game
for me, anyway.
So interesting.
It's very different from yours, which is all multiplayer.
This is true.
Not single player, and you are paying a monthly fee. Well, you could. I suppose they could do a freemium model. Anyway, here's a little bit of Slam by Pendulum. So 3 hours, 35 minutes, and some amount of seconds until we announce the winner for the Las Vegas Convention Contest.
And once that happens, you won't be able to enter anymore unless you have a time machine or a ship capable of traveling around the sun at warp 8.8.
Yeah, that too. So 9 p.m. Pacific, that's midnight Eastern, that is the cutoff time for you guys, anyone who hasn't entered yet, to enter in to the contest for tickets to the Las Vegas Star Trek Convention. Or if you have entered in, you can enter in even more if you want to. So highly advise, if you want to go to Las Vegas for free on us and eat dinner with Roxy, Xander, Tosk, and Dano, you get over to the Riser Radio website and you hit that donate button.
Like right now. Don't even wait.
Like right now, yeah. Because you got the rest of our show, and then you got Rockwell's show, and then that's it. And then there's no more chance to enter at all. And I'd really like to, you know, have you go to Las Vegas, you know. If you have any desire at all to go to the Star Trek Convention, here's your chance to go. Like, we're on us to go. You know, it's like, not many people just, especially in this economy, not many people will just send people other places, you know, on them.
This is a fact.
You know, it's just, go, do it.
Alright, so.
You had some other things you want to talk about your game.
Yeah, there were two things
real quick
about my game that I completely forgot to mention, which is sad, because I thought they were particularly brilliant.
Do tell. I love brilliance.
So, one thing that I really wanted to have is if you were, like, I like the idea of, like, if you're taking, you know, you're controlling your one ship, but I still like the idea of having strategic elements where you command multiple ships. Now, of course, there's always the...
To let you know, Jeffrey, the drawing announcements are going to start on Tosk Late Night Vegas tonight at 9 p.m. Pacific. That's midnight Eastern.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jim.
Sorry. I'm just answering an IRC question.
From MF Jeffrey.
Yeah. But basically, very rarely nowadays do you, like, you see the problem with having any kind of squad-based tactics are that you are limited by the commands you are able to issue to your teammates, be they other spaceships or other people. And some games have done this pretty well. I feel like Mass Effect 2 does a fairly good job. Other games have done it kind of poorly. Mass Effect 1, in my opinion. I had a really hard time controlling my squad mates. One mechanic that I have seen completely disappear from modern games that I really wish they would bring back is the pause function, which you would then pause, give commands to your squad mates or allies, and then unpause and continue to play the game.
Uh-huh.
Because it's often very awkward to control the game at the same time you are trying to control your own ship. Like, to issue orders while you're trying not to get killed. And so the pause function to issue orders is really handy. And maybe even the ability to switch control to another party member if you really need them to do something very specific. Like, if you need another ship in your convoy to perform some very tricky maneuvers to get to a place, you can't really order them to do that.
Right.
But you can switch control, leave your ship on AI, switch control to them, and do what you need them to do. And same thing for the ground combat. And again, this would not work in a multiplayer game, like, whatsoever. but in a single-player game, you can totally do it. And I'm thinking of the old Baldur's Gate, RPGs, where you pause the game, issued commands, and then continued to play in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so much fun, and that worked so well. And I think it would work really well in this function, because it would allow those strategic elements without taking away from your control of your own guy. And it would also allow you to do those without playing a traditional top-down RTS.
I don't know if you could do it in PvP, but Star Trek Online has a pause function.
Really?
Yes.
Does it?
It does.
I did not know.
To where you can have a chance. It gives you 45 seconds as like a pool of time.
Yeah.
45 seconds for the entirety of at least ground combat, the ground portion of it. You can't do it in space. In the ground part of it, though, if you want to issue orders or check out the scenery and whatnot, you can actually pause for a total of 45 seconds on the ground if you want to.
How does that work if there's some other player near you? Like, one time,
it still pauses it.
So the other player just has to pause and wait for you to be done?
Yep.
That sounds really annoying.
It can be. I've had it happen to me a number of times when open instancing was the thing. It still
like,
kind of is, but like when you're leveling up, you have a chance to team up with other people in open instances when you're doing the patrol missions and such outside and out in like the Sirius sector and the Regulus sector block and such out there. And people would pause it and kind of go, okay, what's our plan of attack? And it would be for someone like me who is far more, fast-paced, kinetic, want to get it done, go, 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 go. It's really kind of irritating to have that pause there.
Well, I have a new goal in life, and that goal in life is to make a Star Trek Online character and go around and grief people with the pause function.
Ooh, you're not going to make many friends.
I don't need friends when I can grief you with a pause function. What are you going to do?
I've now wasted 45 seconds of your life. How does it feel?
And I'll have a book, so I won't feel like I've wasted my time.
It's only 45 seconds, though. There's only so much you can get done in 45 seconds.
I can read a page in 45 seconds.
That's true, I suppose. Just grief people one page at a time in a book.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've griefed people for a total of 445 second segments of time. You have an interesting way of keeping track of time, Warren.
Yep.
I'll tell you what. So any other points that you want to put
in
for your game?
That was the big thing that I forgot about and then felt really silly for forgetting about it because I was pretty proud of that. So Bob, tell us about your game.
Alright, my game is an MMO. It is all about multiplayer.
Ooh.
None of this single-player stuff. I live to wound you. No, but my game would be an MMO.
Yeah.
First and foremost, is that'd be MMO, because I love the idea of player interaction.
Mm-hmm.
This MMO would be entirely player-driven. Now, when people hear the words player-driven, what do they think of most of the time? Eve, right?
I guess they do think of Eve. That's not really what usually makes me think of Eve, but I know what you're talking about.
Well, Eve is a very player-driven game, right?
Yes,
it's kind of starting to get into that slide where it's not becoming that. But anyway, I would appreciate to see a Star Trek MMO done in a fashion where it's entirely player-driven, where there are players on all fronts of the galaxy playing as, the Romulans, as the Klingons, as the Federation, as the Cardassians, as the Dominion. This game would be set in late TNG, early DS9. So you're talking season 6 or 7 of TNG, 1 and 2 of DS9 is where I would start it off with.
All right.
And time would march forward from there. And the galaxy would unfold perhaps differently than how we saw it on the show, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be entirely player-driven. So you start out with all the boundary lines that you see on the show during season 7 of TNG. And they may shift and fluctuate depending on what happens within the game universe by the players. The Federation and Klingon Empire might go to war suddenly against each other just because some players decided to skirmish against each other, or the Klingons were launched a daring raid into Federation territory to get some freighters. Suddenly, Federation players see that happening and go respond to it, like, oh my gosh, why are Klingons messing up our freighters?
Now, would the function of declaring war be also up to players? Like, would you have a player playing as the president of the Federation who declares war? Or would that be a function of the game? Once a violence level between Federation players and Klingons players reaches a certain point, war is declared.
As the latter, I think, is how I would do it. But the players are still free to make their actions as they see fit within this galaxy. Like, if the Federation wants to mount a counter-assault to this sudden freighter raid that's happened in their territory, they can totally go do that as players if they want to, and that will increase the violence level, as you say, for that guy. It's like, you're reading my notes or something. But yeah, there would still be a mechanic in play for, like, a quote-unquote declaration of war to happen. So there wouldn't be official war, there'd be, like, border skirmishes, and then it escalates from there. And it can go down, for instance, if the violence doesn't persist.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can have peacetime still, but you can still have your elements of war. Now, any gains that are made during, like, wartime, for instance, would totally happen on the map, on the game universe map. So if the Klingon Empire decided to push into Federation territory and conquer some worlds, like, what are some worlds around there? Let's just give Betazed as an example, even though it's on the other side of the Federation. They want to conquer Betazed.
Okay.
They go and take it from them. They do, like, a ground assault, they have blockaded the planet and such, and if they can establish a Klingon presence on the planet, that planet will become part of the Klingon Empire, and the Federation will have lost that. Mm-hmm. Now, the disadvantage of that for the Federation would be, like, economic, for instance. Like, they wouldn't be able to build better ships, they've lost a personnel resource pool, for instance. You know, like, I'm envisioning the entire thing to play out a lot like you would see Europa Universalis mixed in with Starfleet Command.
Oh, man.
Yes, it's pretty heavy.
Oh, darn.
So you have all the intricacy of Europa Universalis with its trade, but given down, and trade and war and diplomacy, but all at a much more individual personal level. And you still have the ability to conquer territory in a manner such as Starfleet Command, where you are fighting against these other players and these other galactic powers for their territory, or you just want to keep them out of your territory, for instance, is what it is. Now, as far as, like, the actual gameplay portion of it, how, like, the controls work, it's still WASD.
Yeah.
You're still flying around, much as we see in, like, Bridge Commander.
Are we going to be able to roll our ships?
Yes, you will be able to roll your ships, because I do believe in the third dimension.
Thank you. Now, I have a question, just
yes.
From what you're... Now, this is something that's occurred to me with the idea of a dynamic universe where territory control can change hands, especially if losing a planet is detrimental to one faction.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's a risk of one faction just completely dominating the others and it being no fun to play those factions because, like, the Klingon Empire conquers the galaxy? Because as they conquer more planets, they get more stuff. The people they're conquering get less stuff. And it steamrollers. And suddenly the Klingons own everything. And there's no way to oppose them because none of the other factions produce anything meaningful.
If the game is true to Star Trek life, I don't think that's a problem. Because the Star Trek universe is massive, you know, especially, even if you just constrain this to the alpha and beta quadrants, there is so much space and so much stuff in there that for, like, the Klingon Empire, for instance, what's wrong with the example of a Federation Klingon War, because that's what we see in Star Trek Online, that if they, in fact, did launch a all-out offensive, it would still take them, you know, real time, months and months and months, maybe perhaps even like a couple years, to even get to a place to where they can say they are dominating the Federation.
Alright.
At that point, you know? Because they would have to do it, like, procedurally and whatnot. Like, they could go claim pockets, for instance, out in the middle of Federation space. Like, they could camp out on Vulcan, for instance, if they wanted to. But if they do that, they're really far from, like, supply lines, for instance. Players can't get there very well or very easily without running to other Federation patrols. You know, it's like, that's still a thing that would happen there. It's like supply lines, you know, if you don't have the ability to logistically support your troops behind these lines, then, you know, it becomes harder and harder to hold those positions.
All right, fair enough.
So, you know, by the way, this is a very, very PvP-centered game.
Yeah,
I am talking about here.
That.
Yeah, I mean, you would still have a lot of NPC stuff wandering around on both sides still, just for both filler, but also mostly gameplay, because not all players are going to be on at all times, obviously.
Now,
go ahead.
I was going to ask, are players in this scenario controlling one ship, or are they controlling fleets?
They will be, at most, controlling one ship.
Okay.
At most.
In fact, about at least? Can they control half a ship?
Actually, at least they could be a crew member aboard a ship. Ooh. If they wanted to. And that's actually not the most limiting... That's actually one of the FASs I find most limiting about a lot of the new MMOs that are coming out. Is that you can't play as, like, a simple merchant anymore, if you wanted to. Or as a musician, like you could in Star Wars Galaxies. Right? So in this game, you could, in fact, if you wanted to, hang out in the Klingon restaurant all day on DS9 and play the flute if you wanted to. That's one of the things you could do.
That was one of my favorite things about Galaxies. Now, I shall tell you, this game that you're talking about is actually sounding kind of like Star Trek Mountain Blade. If Mountain Blade was an MMO. Especially the merchant thing. That's one of my favorite things to do in Mountain Blade, is be a merchant and try to, like, balance the optimal ratio of guards to caravan size. Because, you know, the more money you spend on guards, the less return you make on each run, but the less you spend on guards, the more vulnerable you are to bandits.
Yep. See, the entire design goal for this game would be to be able to provide an open, player-driven Star Trek world that is populated by players that have an impact on that world. And you can have an impact as small as being a musician if you wanted to. But I think those create some of the best stories when they're not necessarily about the Starfleet captain charging into battle, like we see with Star Trek Online, for instance, with a lot of how those narratives play out.
Yeah.
But about, like, the real people that you see on there. Not saying, like, Cap Picard isn't a real person, but, you know, I like being able to...
Bob, this may come a little hard to you, but Captain Picard's not a real person. He's played by an actor named Patrick Stewart. He doesn't actually go to space, okay? I'm sorry to ruin this for you, Bob.
You knew what I meant, you jerk.
Did I now?
I guess not. But anyway, you knew what I meant. Anyway, you know, it's that I want to be able to create a self-sustaining model where those narratives can come up still, but not have to worry about having, like, a writer team or a dev team have to implement it all in-game, for instance. You know, like, with a player-driven world where, you know, wars can happen between these great major powers that are dictated by the player, similar to how RF Online worked, for instance.
Say what? You're going to have to tell me about that.
RF Online was a really obscure MMO where you had three different factions that could diplomatize with each other, and they each actually had a president that was in charge of their faction, and they could, you know, talk to each other and ally against the one and all that. But anyway, losing my train of thought. Thank you for derailing me off to RF Online. Sheesh, Oren.
I apologize.
Anyway, I would like to be able to see it evolve into, you know, where you see a lot of that, what's called emergent gameplay.
Yeah.
You know, where you see, you know, while people may go out and mine, for instance, or so, you suddenly see Klingons coming in and, you know, perhaps stopping the mining operations because they're like, hey, we don't want you to have better ships. Mm-hmm. And then Federation coming in and going, well, hey, we're patrolling this sector now, so if you come in here, we're going to, you know, destroy you. And then, like, a Klingon response is like, either, oh, we'll pull back and focus somewhere else, or we will, you know, reinforce this kind of harassment assault, and, like, seeing something like that scale up from there. And then also have the part of gameplay where you're hearing about it, but you're not necessarily actively participating in conflict by being that musician in the bar. You know, like those Starfleet officers that serve on those ships in the front line come to DS9 to the Klingon bar, and they talk about, like, oh man, we were, you know, on board the USS, you know, Charlie or Crazy Horse, and, you know, we had this battle with these two Klingon birds of prey. You know, like, that's this kind of interaction I want to see in an MMO, more or less, or in this Star Trek game I want to see.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It does. It is a lot of fun. I would play a game like this. The faults I do see with it being that you can play as anything. I could see maybe the player base getting really, really spread out. Yeah. That's where, like, the idea of NPC filler comes in.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, you'll still have, like, your fleets and groups of players that won't necessarily act, like, together contiguously for that faction. Like, you'll have Federation players that won't act like how Federation personnel would, right? Or, like, how a Starfleet captain would. Mm-hmm. So, the mechanic I want to put in for that, to deter that, would be, like, a passive, like, stat bonus for your character. And it can be, like, social skills, combat skills, whatever you want it to be. But if a Starfleet captain is going around blowing everything up he sees without talking to them first, they won't get that bonus. So there won't be, like, an active detriment for not doing it. Like, there won't be a negative associated with it, just they won't get, the stat bonus I'm talking about, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So if I go up and I actually hail the ship that's assaulting the freighter first and go like, hey, you should stop that, I'm going to open fire, I would gain points toward getting this bonus. And this bonus would be static.
Huh.
that you would get. So it would fill up, and as you did more and more good things, it would cap out at a certain point, because obviously you just become overly ridiculously powerful at some point. But if you did anything that was counter to what, like, Starfleet doctrine would say, it would go down.
Now, here's this is a really cool idea, but here's a thought.
Yep.
If you implement this sort of system, it sounds like you probably wouldn't just be implementing it for Starfleet. You'd be implementing it for the other factions.
Yep.
The problem I'm seeing with this is that it sounds like being a Klingon would suddenly be the best thing, because behavior is, like, very in line with your traditional super aggressive PvP player who likes to gank people.
Well, they would be honor bound to do the proper right thing, is the thing, right?
Uh-huh.
So if a Klingon was, for instance, under orders to go and sterilize a world, for instance, like we saw in that one Enterprise episode,
yeah,
you know, that has some sort of plague on it, or we'll go with that scenario. They go to this planet to sterilize it, but then a doctor there has found a cure and is curing the populace, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't the Klingon then be honor-bound to go, oh, well, if there's a cure, I'm not so worried about sterilizing this planet, I can report back to my superiors and say it's not a problem, right?
Yeah.
So if you go ahead and sterilize the planet, you will lose honor, and you won't have that stat bonus anymore, right?
Yeah, okay.
So whereas if you let the doctor go ahead and do his thing, your honor would dictate that you were, you know, an honorable individual, and you let the doctor go ahead and fix everybody. Right, so it can work for different powers out there.
Yeah,
it would be a little strange for the Borg, which I would have the Borg playable.
Really?
Yes, I would have the Borg playable.
That's ambitious.
Playable Borg, that's what I would do. And not like, you know, liberated Borg, like we see in Star Trek Online, where you can have, like, a Klingon or Starfleet officer that was once Borg, but you are actually can be a drone if you want to be.
I feel like that would be your selling line for the game. It would be like, Bob's Star Trek game, subline, you can play the Borg.
You can play the Borg. Yeah, you know, I really want to be able to have that universe where you can play as anything or anyone. Now, granted, there would be some limits. Like, obviously, you wouldn't see the Borg musician, right? Like,
well,
Well, I could maybe a flute prosthesis. I don't know. Do Borg have lungs?
Yeah, they have lungs, but they don't care about music.
Well, that's true, I suppose. Some nitpicky things, for instance, like ground combat. I really actually hate the term ground combat. I'd really rather have an experience that was, while it included combat, it would also be about, like, talking to people, like your dual wit system, for instance. I would love to have that system in there, like a dual wit where you're, like, point, counterpoint, and have, like, social combat, as it would be called. But the combat I would want to have play out from, like, the physical standpoint of shooting phasers would be similar to, like, Rainbow Six Vegas, for instance, where you Velcro to cover and you're ducking around shooting phasers or whatever it is you want to get.
Right?
Now, I know you're not a fan of regenerating health.
I do not like regenerating health.
Well, I don't like regenerating health either, as a matter of fact. But I do not like the idea of having a health bar and picking up med packs that are lying around on the ground.
Yeah.
So how I would do it is I would have, you start out with a certain amount of health, right? And as you're taking hits, granted the hits that you take would be pretty severe. Like if you took a phaser blast full on to the chest or head, you'd drop. But if it was like to the leg or arm or so, you would lose, you know, that health, because you were injured. You're now being mechanically disabled in some way, right?
Yeah.
And the way that would be handled for, like, injury repair, for instance, would that you'd have to be going back to, like, a doctor, or if you happen to have, like, a medic with you, they could administer a hypospray to, you know, kind of alleviate some of that health, you know, like, loss that you just suffer from a mechanical standpoint, as far as the gameplay is considered. But I would definitely want it to be a situation where if you're in a phaser fight, this is a serious thing that you're in. Like, if someone's shooting a disruptor at you, you need to keep your head down and make sure you're picking your shots correctly.
You do not want to get by a phaser.
You don't.
Would you institute some of the quasi-canon devices that have never been seen in the show but are very common tropes in video games, like personal force fields? Like, you see those a lot in Star Trek video games. I think, does Star Trek Online have them?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, but we never actually see them in the show. I think they occasionally get mentioned.
Worf made one once in Fistful of Data's.
Oh, right.
Out of a communicator and, like, holographic 19th century
but
stuff.
But the implication was that wouldn't stop a phaser.
Yeah, it was bullets that was deflecting for, like, 6 seconds or whatever it was. But I think I would leave that up to the players to be able to devise that kind of stuff with a crafting economy.
So, but they would be in the game, is my question. Or are your players going to have to, like, you know, go into your engine and create this effect, using your development tools?
You know, that's a good question that I hadn't actually thought of. I would definitely want the universe to be able to unfold so that players can create, you know, new equipment as time marches on, if they wanted to, granted as long as, like, the time period fit for it, for instance. So it would be starting in, when did TNG end? 2370?
Something like that.
Yeah, so 2370, you're marching on from there, and time is going on in real time. So a year later, it's 2371, 72, 73, 74. And as time's marching on, obviously more equipment, quote-unquote, would become available as time was marching on. Right? Yeah. I think how I'd do it is I would insert those schematics in there to be discoverable by the player base.
And it might be cool, like, you know, in a perfect situation, it might be cool to release your development tools, allow players to come up with their own gear and their own ships, and then submit them,
I could see that happening on, like, an approval basis.
Yeah, like, submit them to, you know, whatever your company is that's making this game, and have it, and be like, hey, I got your development tools, I made this cool thing, I think it fits, here's my explanation of what it is and what it would do, and then you could show it to, you know, to the company, and the game design people at the company could look at it and be like, yeah, this is actually really cool. We'll implement it, or say, no, it's lame, or it's cool, but we're going to wait until the time period advances to the point where it's appropriate. And then you could determine...
That, or it could be harder to craft before that time period. Like, yeah. There could be either you need to find these really, really rare things, so you couldn't have, like, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. You could have one, but then, like, the resource restriction wouldn't be as, you know, I guess, tough as you progress later on. Like, an Excelsior would be really, really easy to build, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, out of the Starfleet shipyards. Whereas, gosh, what was new in 2370? The Prometheus. Sovereign? Yeah, Sovereign would be really tough.
Don't talk about Prometheus to me. Don't bring that up.
I love me some multi-vector assault mode.
Oh my goodness. Why?
Yeah, so like a Sovereign, like, you couldn't produce a whole lot of those because those resources aren't as widely available, so you need a lot of resources to make it happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that would be the way I would handle that. Like, every power could have, like, a research and development, department that they could have, like, back at, like, Jupiter Station, for instance, for Federation, where they could submit those kinds of things.
I feel like if you're, like, playing a musician or some other kind of non-combat class, if you go into, like, a bar, like, you go into Quarks, there should already be a musician there, either another player or an NPC, and you should have to do some kind of music duel to get them to leave.
So yeah.
So it can be your bar now.
Yeah, well, that would definitely be...
Show up with a
that can go along with the merchant class that I would have in mind for that. I mean, and another thing that I would think for across all the characters is that all the skills in the game would be available to you.
Uh-huh.
Everything from, you know, like Starship Command down to playing that flute. You could have all those things available to you. Now, and everyone can perform these tasks to some baseline level. Like, obviously, if I, Bob Collins, picked up a flute and tried to play it, I wouldn't be very good at it. But
no,
I couldn't, no. I really couldn't. You know, but I know how to, like, hold a flute, like, I've seen it done before. That would represent, like, you know, zero in there. Then you can pick a number of, like, skill specializations, means that you are good at these things. That way you can kind of more organically create your Starfleet officer or character, whoever it might be, whether you're that musician, that merchant, that military officer in these different galactic powers. So... if you wanted to be an engineer that specialized in, like, warp theory, you could just jam all your specialization points into that if you wanted to. You wouldn't be very good at, like, shooting a phaser necessarily or playing the flute, but you would be really good at this one thing. So you'd be.
I think it's clear which one you're losing out on this one.
Oh yeah, definitely the flute. I'll tell you what.
You don't want to be stuck in Quarks on a slow night without your flute skill.
Nope, definitely not. But that way, people can go ahead and create these characters that not only have, like, their vocation, but they also have their hobbies figured out as well. Like, there have to be... I'm almost actually making it sound like The Sims, almost.
Ooh.
But... which I don't like that game.
Put two crew members in the holodeck and then remove the door and see what happens.
Starve to death.
I feel like they should make this as a mod.
For what? What would you make that a mod for?
They should make them a mod for The Sims.
For Sims.
Star Trek mod.
I think they do, actually, already.
Really?
Yes, there's... in fact, you can see it in one of the Captain Jean-Luc Picard videos that Voltaire did with that song. Yeah, there's, like, a Sims version of that already.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. My mind is blown.
Or is just holding his head now, unsure of what to think of this.
I'm no longer certain of the universe that I live in.
Well, you know, these are the things that people come up with, just like we're coming up with all this kinds of stuff here. So, yeah, I mean, a very player-driven, PvP-oriented system, game, is what I would make. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the game I would make, because I really like player interaction, and I really like dynamic worlds. This is why I'm probably going to be playing like, a lot of Guild Wars 2 when it comes out. And that's why I shy away more from MMOs like World of Warcraft, or Rift, or the Old Republic is coming out, because it's going to be very kind of linear, story-driven gameplay. And I like stories still, but I like stories that are crafted by us, the players, more so than being fed these stories.
Now, here's a thought. Are you going to, in this game, would players be able to earn positions of authority over other players? Like, for example, can you become an admiral and then, like, be in a position to issue orders to other captains?
I think the way that that would work out is just by having a system in there for guilds or fleets to exist already in there for whatever vocation you might choose. So if you're a Starfleet officer, obviously you're taking commands from, if you choose to be on a starship, from the starship captain or the starbase director. Wherever it is you choose to go ahead and play. So you'd be taking orders from them. Now, you can deny them or not take them if you want, but then you won't gain that cool stat bonus I was talking about earlier, right? And as for, like, merchants, for instance, if you want to play as a merchant, you'd be getting your, quote-unquote, orders from whoever you're delivering cargo to or from, or you could be working for yourself with your own business. For, like, a starship captain, you can pretty much go alone if you wanted to, if you're a starship captain, or you can take orders from whoever you're fleet admiral or task force captain might be, for instance, if you choose to organize it that way. You know, so you can definitely play by yourself in this player-driven world if you wanted to, but there will obviously be those hierarchies that will be established by the players because, you know, we as people want to bring order to a lot of things that are obviously chaotic.
Yeah.
And this game world will definitely be very chaotic at first because there's not a whole lot of direction that's given in because the player are providing the direction for how everything is going to happen.
Now, how's your game going to work when it first launches and it doesn't have a huge amount of subscribers, like, first off?
I would honestly not want to worry about the subscriber base. That's honestly one of the things I think dooms a lot of MMOs, is that we have to get, like, a million subscribers.
No,
500,000 subscribers.
That's not what I mean. What I mean is, because at the, like, at first, because so many of your roles are player-driven, what happens when there aren't, like, at the beginning, when you don't have quite enough players to fill all those roles?
Oh, yeah, there would be NPCs still to fill that
stuff.
So
you're going to have, like, a function where, like, the more players that join, the fewer NPCs there are?
Right.
Okay, yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly how I would handle that, just like that. Now, granted, it's going to be, you know, I'm talking to Mannequin Joe, who's playing the flute in the playing a restaurant bar.
Until you banjo duel him out.
Banjo
duel him right out of the game.
Yeah, you know, but someday there will be someone that will come along that will want to play flute either with him or be kicking him out, essentially, is what will happen. So you'll shame him out with your flute and his banjo playing.
Yeah.
You know, so I would handle it with NPC population first, and then as players spread through the galaxy and start taking control of more of the stuff, they would be replacing the NPCs, and NPCs would disappear, or go find other things to do. NPCs don't necessarily have to disappear, mind you. They can actually just go do different things. You know, that banjo player just moves on to a different bar.
Yeah.
You know, it hangs out there. But that's my game. That's how I would do my game.
That does sound like a rad game. I like to play that game.
I would like to play it too, but I don't have it yet. Or rather, all these elements are in different games, but I don't want to play 15 games, you know, at once.
Play one game for 15 minutes or 15 games for 1 minute.
Yeah. So, we still got a little bit of time left, which I'm actually shocked.
Yeah, I thought...
Because usually we're running right up to the hour.
I feel like we did a pretty good explanation on both of our games. I feel... Like, at some point in the future, not... for reference, next week, we're going to be... Bob isn't going to be here next week.
I am not going to be here next
tragic.
Week.
He's going to be at the Ren Fair, which is kind of ironic if you think he's ditching out on Star Trek to go hang out with the Renaissance people.
I prefer fantasy celebration.
Really? Is there fantasy stuff going
well,
on at the Ren Fair?
That's how my friend termed it. That was invited Megan and I along.
Yeah, all right.
But,
I mean, I guess the fantasy of the Ren Fair is that everything isn't covered in sewage.
I did think about actually dressing up in a Starfleet uniform.
Oh, man.
And going.
Why not? You could just say you're a time traveler.
I could say I was
you're
a time traveler.
You're RPing as a time traveler.
I could say that. But we are going to have a guest host here.
Yes.
With you.
Fortunately, so I don't have to do this alone. My good friend Elliot is going to be joining me. And if any of you have listened to Tales from the DMZ that we put out, Elliot is... is the voice of Lanu, and he's probably the best voice we've gotten so
Uncle
far.
Uncle Lanu.
Because he is really good.
I could listen to him read the phone book.
Yeah. And we're going to be talking about the Borg. Which is exciting, because I've wanted to talk about the Borg for a while now.
And I'm sad, because I want to talk about the Borg.
Don't worry, there's more than one episode worth of stuff for the Borg.
It's true.
We will get to the Borg again at some point. There's, you know, we could talk about the Borg for 4 hours and not be done.
We could, it's true. Which is kind of sad when you think about it, because the Borg I thought were really awesome to begin with their, you know, very much non-individualistic way, and then they became individualized. And
well, someone's trying to jump the gun by a week.
I just want to talk about the Borg.
Don't worry, we'll get to this stuff. But, I mean, at some point, what I'd like to do is I would like to talk about various Star Trek pencil and paper RPGs.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I've got a few of those up on my shelf.
Ooh.
And let me tell you, some of those are a little absurd.
Yes, they are.
And those are some
no,
great...
No, CODA. I hate CODA.
No, you got to go with the one CODA that I have, which is like half the character generation rules are in the front of the book and the other half are in the back.
Best book layout.
Yeah, it's
design.
So well laid out. It's like, you know, all right, here are the rules for making a non-Starfleet personnel. Oh, did you want to play Starfleet personnel? 200 pages further, here are the rules for creating a Starfleet personnel.
Much hate.
And of course, trills are broken.
Yes, they are.
Because trills just get free skill points for having a symbiont. And there's no reason not to have a symbiont. It doesn't cost anything. You just have
so
one.
Silly.
And the only thing that you lose is, like, you're weaker to getting punched in the stomach. that's the only downside. And you get a lot of skills out of being joined.
Yep.
Although I was kind of considering a character that was that was like the first host of his symbiote, like a trill with a baby symbiote. And so he gets the symbiote and he's all excited and then, like, no, I don't feel any different. Now I just have a slug in my stomach.
That's a shame.
This is a sad day.
All right, folks, we got Rockwell coming up at the top of the hour here. He is flying his new flagship USS Toshiba.
The USS Toshiba.
Yep, and he commands it with no pants.
Oh my goodness, we're back on this track again?
We're never not on this track
with
Rockwell.
Track?
When
right.
Rockwell's involved, it's always no pants.
Oh, that's good to know.
Have you ever walked by the booth after our show and seen him in there?
Look, I wear like Sharpie over sunglasses when I walk by the booth, just to make sure that I'm safe. That
sounds detrimental to your, like, seeing going where you're going thing.
It's worth it.
I suppose. Maybe I'll join you on
it's
that.
It's a welcome trade-off.
All right, folks, you've been listening to All Things Trek. All Things Trek, mind you. Not singular thing, but Things Trek. Here on Riser Radio with myself, DJ Bob.
And DJ Oren.
And I will not see you next week.
No,
but Oren
will.
And I'll see you the week after. Have a good night, folks. Remember, we got drawing coming up 9 o'clock tonight, p.m., 9 p.m. Pacific, on Toss Show. Midnight Eastern, that's 8 o'clock. Or 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
Right? In the,
8 in the morning
in the
UK.
Yeah. Gosh, I hate time zones. Stupid
yeah.
trains.
Yeah, I know.
Train riots, right?
Time riots.
Time riots, yes. All right. Have a good night, folks.